This is the Agile Thoughts Podcast, and I'm Lance Kine.
This is Will Iverson with ChangeNode. Go check it out, changenode.com. And I've got a website there where I'm helping folks in the tech industry think about jobs and careers and how to move all that forward. And the YouTube video also covers tech and especially job stuff.
This is a continuing episode of a series with Will Iverson about tech jobs and IT in the face of AI.
I did a video a little while ago where I said, we're all dev managers now. And basically the idea was, is like, you know, if I told a group of devs, go off and build me something for 3 months and then come back, you're probably not going to get good quality or what you expected or wanted out of it. But if you sit there and you work with a team and you're present, like as the manager, and you work with it and can review it, and especially if you're technical enough to evaluate what it's doing, then I feel like I'm getting pretty good results. And so it's sort of hard to articulate. I think that there's this real urge to put this stuff into like a, it's good or it's bad.
Yeah. It's not binary. You know? Right. No, right.
And practice, I'm more like, well, we're getting natural language interfaces to everything, which is really cool.
Yeah,
like if you
think
about it, like that's sure. Actually cool.
You know, Star Trek.
Exactly. And I know this isn't like the sci-fi show or whatever, but I don't know about you, but I've been watching like the original Star Trek from the 60s with my son recently, because you know, he's 15 now and he's digging it. So we're watching that. We're watching, you know, Star Wars, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. He actually watched Terminator 1 and 2 and liked them. You know, it was cool. So he's getting to see AI in fiction, and I'm getting to revisit all those things. And it's been kind of tripping me out how much it's changed how I view that material. Like, for example, Star Wars. I'm like, yeah, those Star Wars robots are just running LLMs.
Yeah.
Like, it's really transparent, including where they're capable and not. You know, and even Star Trek too. Like, you know, one of the questions I always had when I'd watch Star Trek is like, well, what are these people doing? Why do they say that this ship has 400 or 1,000 people on it or what have you? Yeah. When you're like, well, can't I just tell the computer to fire the torpedoes or, you know, whatever. And now I'm like, just like when I use an AI or an LLM, like by way of example. So I have this idea for a little video game thing I want to do, right? And, you know, one of the things in the game, it's like a strategy game. So I want to do pathfinding, right? Like start, you know, have a little unit on one side of the map and click a button on and have it go to the other side, right? So it's called A-Star Pathfinding. And it's a common game problem. You know, how do I move my little guys around, right? That process of interacting with the AI, like I said, well, is it going to be faster to do that processing on the CPU with the web worker? Should I push it onto the graphics card with web GPU or web GL, right? The implementation of it and all that stuff. It's like me and I have to bring my development technical expertise to the table because otherwise it's just like two people that don't know what they're doing talking to each other isn't very effective.
Are you saying when you're conversing with the LLM, is that what's happening here? I didn't catch that.
Yeah.
Part.
So okay. Let's say I'm sitting down. So I'm using Claude right now for a lot of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I will point Claude at a directory that has my app in it. And I'll say like, let's build a feature. Let's do a thing. Right. And if I had no technical background at all, and especially if it got stuck or wasn't doing anything, it'd be really hard to get it to go in the right direction. And so what I'm trying to work out is, what the heck does this mean economically? Do you need fewer developers? Do you say that now you can produce apps really fast? Like, there's one vision of this. Like, do you remember microservices and monoliths?
Yeah.
Like, are we going to decompose things into a million little apps or whatever? Right. Well, now imagine if everybody comes into work every day and you have 50 devs and they're all banging out 20 microservices a day or something. Like, like, how are you going to manage it? What are you going to do with it?
I can't manage that. That's too much. But, well, I would think, anyhow. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's an environment where that would work. Oh, well, okay. So if it's like 15 micro, maybe they're like working several small startups within this company. I suppose that could be a thing. But that's pretty high rate, man. That's That's an amazing rate. And if you could make it work, you could do something pretty awesome and outpivot your competition, unless they're doing the same thing. That's the story, right?
Yeah. One of the things I saw in a report was they said that older developers, or more seasoned or experienced developers, whatever terminology you want to use, that they were more likely to have one agent running at a time. Right? Like they'd fire up their terminal and they'd maybe use their agent, or they'd maybe use, you know, ChatGPT in the window or what have you, right? And that people who were newer to development were much more likely to have, you know, 10 windows open with an AI running in all of them at the same time, right? And like, I'm sitting there, I'm like, I can't work out which is, you know.
I don't know. Like if the one, sound like good either. Right? What agent might be the right number? I don't know what's going on with the 10 windows. It sounds like multitasking to me, and it sounds like it'd be a lot of things going slowly.
Yeah, I mean, I used to do, like, if you were doing builds on a project, especially let's say the builds were running on the server, right? Uh-huh. The idea that I might do some work and then kick off a build, especially if the build's going to take 30 minutes, mm-hmm. and then I'll keep working on something else, mm-hmm. you know, and then come back and check the build. That seems
that's
pretty classic.
Yeah,
I sort of joke, like, I've never owned a computer that was fast enough, right? Because, like, hey, I want to do video editing. I want to do dev work. I want to do this. I want to do that. What does it mean to say, well, like, if a state-of-the-art LLM, ideally, I want it to run on my computer, not the cloud, right?
Right.
And let's say that I want to use a frontline one that's 100 gigabytes. That's why we have to use the cloud ones. So what I really want is a machine that I can run, you know, 20 or 30 agents all at the same time doing stuff, ideally on my machine, so I'm not sending all that data to Anthropic or OpenAI or somebody.
By the way, Will, I feel like if you're not thinking cloud or trying to use the cloud for your work, in a way, you're actually missing a trick. So I would say that's another anchoring of the traditional developer thinking.
Well, I mean, I use Claude. Claude's hosted, you know, and I pay money for that. One of the things that comes up a lot when I talk to other folks at companies right now is so many of them are working at companies where they don't want to use cloud-based AI, right? So they don't want to use OpenAI or Claude, right? Because they don't want to send their stuff to those servers. But then what's happening is there's this really weird thing where all of the individual devs are like, yeah, but I'm so much more productive if I use that tooling, that they buy it on their personal account.
Okay.
Right.
Let's pin this one down for a second. So there is a problem, folks. If you're going to use cloud services, you need to know what they're doing with your data and see if you're okay with that. And so if you get a individual license today in 2025, if you get an individual license in Claude or GPT, they all seem to be, all the ones that I've read so far seem to be willing to reuse your data for processing. And what does that exactly mean? Not sure, but basically, potentially they're outsourcing something to another company that's managing data retention or cleaning up things. Who knows? We don't know. And they don't care to tell us. But that's something you should be aware of, and certainly an issue if your employer doesn't want you to get their source code into their LLM. However, if you buy that same bloody product with an enterprise license, Will, and all of a sudden the terms are different. And like, for example, the Microsoft Copilot, they don't do that. They keep your data from being managed by other processors. Now, this all comes down to trust, and what do you trust what people put in their T's and C's, and whether they'll change their mind a year from now and after you're hooked on it, who knows? As far as I've seen, the enterprise licenses of all those same companies and those same GPTs is you can get a better business level one that you can, you know, copy paste your code right in there and go for it. And that's actually very common now for companies who have that, what's it called? That license, the corporate license.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember reading reports that people, even now, there's a lot of people who don't really understand even what's running on a server or on their computer, because we make it look like it's seamless, right? Like we're using Google Docs for the notes, for this thing. So there are people who would say, but Google Docs, it's running on my computer because it's running in my browser. And you're like, no, there's cloud. And so then there's this blurry line. Like if I use my email client, right? And people will say things like, well, but, you know, am I on the internet? Because if I'm still able to do my email, like write it and send it if my internet's turned off. But you're like, no, but you're still sending the email through the server, right?
I agree with all that. Where this is going, though, I'm very curious.
Because I think that, like, let's take Microsoft Copilot as an example, okay? I think it's a little bit blurry for the typical end user if they enter a query into Microsoft Copilot. Right. Did that request and that response happen on their machine? Did it go to a cloud service? Oh, right?
Totally went to a cloud service.
Well, and then and they're actually going to be blurring it because there are local LLMs that scale all the way down to like a gigabyte, right? And so like Apple and Microsoft have gigabyte level, you know, LLMs that run on device because like Apple wants Siri to still work if you're not logged in, right? Or if you're offline. And so then there's this model. Like, so if I use ChatGPT's integration on the iPhone right now, I can talk to Siri and say, ask ChatGPT, blah, blah, blah. The Siri stuff, some of that's handled on device and some of that's handled on the cloud, right?
Okay.
From a cost standpoint, like let's say that I have a really dumb request, like, you know, the functional equivalent of like, what's 2 + 2, mm-hmm. right? There's no reason to send that request over the network to go hit a high-end NVIDIA, you know, $20,000, you know, server to answer 2 + 2 = 4, sure. right?
Right.
And so then you get to this blended architecture model where you have a local LLM that handles its a lot of its queries, but then you've trained the local LLM to say, oh, nope, I need help. I'm going to go reach out to the big brother. And you'll note there's many ways to interpret big brother server to go handle the request when it becomes more complicated, right?
Yeah.
And like where that gets even weirder on top of that is when you start throwing MCP in.
Yeah.
So for the users who don't know, MCP is a protocol that has been adopted pretty widely that lets an LLM or an AI talk to other services and servers and things. And that's like, you know, we're sitting here in May of 2025 chatting, and right now that's the new hotness, right? Like I can use MCP to talk to my note-taking software. I can use it to talk to, I've seen MCP server implementations that talk to Blender to do 3D stuff. I've seen them for DaVinci Resolve for video editing and on and on and on. So then you get into this thing where the server that's doing the AI processing might be in the cloud, but the tool use is happening on my local machine.
Right.
So that's what I mean by like, it's very blurry and complicated.
Right. Hybrid cloud, local and in cloud. I agree. I'm and so, okay, cool. Let's just add a little more to the MCP. MCP basically means giving a tool belt to your LLM so it can now do things in the real world. And you can enable many, many tools, as Will was talking about, and one of which is drive an IDE and check in code into a Git account and submit a pull request for you to look at. So and that's where we get into like having a virtual developer at that point. Mm-hmm. So, and I haven't had time to experiment with this, but I will soon. But I've heard that and seen a demo where it will install the tools it needs to into your local environment if you're missing something. So when you think about like Python or Java or something, you have a dependency mm-hmm. that's missing because you said, hey, go build this mm-hmm. thing. And it said, oh, I got to go install React. And so it's going to go download a React library from the internet onto your local machine so it can start going doing development. So that's something very sensible it needs to do. But, yep. you know, that's a pretty big deal. It's installing software on your machine.
Yeah, I mean, NPM, which is a, you know, for those who aren't on it, NPM, which is a registry for JavaScript and TypeScript tooling, that already is a registry. And I think that there's also websites that have what they call like a meta MCP server. So it's basically like you install one MCP server, and that server knows how to install anything else that you might want to need with a registry with thousands of servers already.
Wow. Right? Okay.
So that's sort of the joke about the security side, right? Like, you know, like if I'm on my Mac, when I run Claude, the command line version of Claude in a folder, it puts that directory into like a sandbox. It uses the Max sandbox feature. So that way, presumably, the AI can't break out and start writing things to random files on my system. Right?
Oh, okay. So it can install things into the sandbox, but it can't, like, you know, put a malware into your other apps or something like that.
Yeah. So, like, I'm, you know, I have a source folder in my home directory that I throw all my projects in, and then I usually put projects in those in subfolders organized by my GitHub accounts, right? So, you know, my whatever that might be. And so when I open up a project, I open it up in the folder for that project.
Yeah.
Right. Cause I don't want to, like, you know, start messing around with other stuff. I just want it to stay local. And that's where the MCP stuff sort of blows it open, though, because, like, if I give it access to a tool that has file access,
mm-hmm.
where it can just start tromping all over my system and doing whatever.
Maybe installs Linux on your Mac.
Yeah, that'd be cool. You know, give me an Apple Silicon native version. I want SteamOS and Bazite for my Mac, but
I should try that out. I don't think it can do it, though. I don't think it can reboot. You need some hardware help to reboot your computer, I believe. Well, there's a bunch of remote startup stuff that system admins use nowadays if it's set up.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's shutdown and reboot. Those are just terminal commands. No, that's no big deal. It's been on Unix forever. So yeah, absolutely. And the way it works right now is whenever you invoke a new command line tool, it asks for permission first.
Ace is an agile consultant who shares space with a coffee shop in order to save on the rent. Meet this hard-boiled agile consultant and follow his adventures on helping his clients become agile no matter the circumstance. Scrum Noir, the project management comic book that teaches you agile, is available on Amazon. Just search for Scrum Noir. N-O-I-R. We've got more value in the show notes, which have useful links that we discussed or are related to this topic. What are show notes? Show notes show up right in your podcast player for your easy access. If you don't use a podcast player and you downloaded this MP3, go back to the website where you got it and you will see the show notes there. The series started at episode 309. If you're like my friend Boris and you missed the first episode or any of the intervening episodes, go to agilethoughts.info and there you'll find a search box where you can type in the episode number and it will find it for you in a jiffy. Next episode, more Will Iverson.
The reason I call it the dystopian gap is because there is a point where I think if enough people can't work mm-hmm. and pay their bills, it starts to become a real economic and political problem, right? Like, if you get to where unemployment hits 20%,
mm-hmm.
or more specifically, and this is one of the problems, is that you might have a really low unemployment number, but that's because there's so many people that need people that are like the lower end of the spectrum for jobs.
Okay. Right?
Yeah. Like, as in, well, there's plenty low-paid of jobs.
Right.
Like, there's plenty of low-paid jobs.
Mowing lawns, blowing weeds, raking.
Yep. Working the line at the retail food,
picking
fast food
apples.
Joint. Picking apples, right?
The Grapes of Wrath reference.
But some of that stuff's getting yes. automated, too. Like there are robots that... Because, like, when you're a farmer and you want to pick your plants... It is actually easier to just get a machine that you can just run through the field for a day than to try to deal with bringing on a bunch of workers to deal with that, right?